Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay.
Well, happy winter solstice. Okay, that was actually last Saturday. This week, many of us in Gallatin Valley and beyond will be celebrating Christmas, the beginning of Hanukkah, and Kwanzaa. Today, our first episode is new, produced by Ken Lane, on December 20th, 2024. He calls it Christmas Amongst the Joshua Trees, and whether you live in the desert or the mountains or the valleys, I think you'll like it.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert on this winter solstice eve. And we've got some big news from Anatolia, modern-day Turkey, where archaeologists say they have found the tomb of St. Nicholas. Old St. Nick, better known as Santa Claus. But it's all over the internet, it must be true. But if you've seen this news in recent days and you dig back for the actual source, the news article, it turns out this story is 7 or 8 years old and has recently found a new audience online and been made popular anew by people who don't know what the month, day, and year means at the top of a news article. But that's all right if it's old news. Christmas itself is old news, after all. That's why we love it. Because it's ancient and beautiful. The time for silent walks and the cold night, just the sound of your boots crunching through the snow. So I just want to talk to you about it for a minute. The Guardian, the newspaper, put out this article that starts off saying the news of finding St. Nicholas's tomb and the very church named for him, and in accord with centuries of tradition, has, quote, dashed the hopes of millions of children, end quote. Who wrote that? Well, the name's right there on the miserable article, but I'm not going to dignify it by saying it on the radio. Because radio signals travel forever into space. And that's a kind of immortality. I don't know if this is in the style book at The Guardian, but saints are not expected to be physically alive for thousands of years. They die as we all do. Even if, like Elijah being taken up by the Lord into the strange skies above, they are dead for all practical purposes, no longer living here on earth as human mortal beings. Saints are not vampires. They live, they die, and their spirit lives on here on earth, where they intercede in the affairs of men and women, just like in the old times, the ancient days. Children should not have their hopes dashed by the Guardian newspaper. Luckily, no one under 45 years old or so has ever seen or heard of the Manchester Guardian, nor any other newspaper. Besides, I saw a surely scientific forensic reconstruction of the living face of St. Nicholas And it's a jolly old man with a white beard. What do you know? A new study proves it. Go ahead and enjoy your Christmas holiday. Let the kids out of their rooms. Let them come out for Christmas morning to unwrap their Steam gift cards or whatever. Maybe a BB gun. Or a nice new shovel. Every kid loves a shovel, and then they can go outside and try it out by clearing the snow out of the driveway. If you've listened to this radio show for any length of time, you know that we just love to gather the signs and wonders of our time like a crow gathering shiny treasures to take back to the home site. You might remember that exactly 5 years ago, the American Great Plains was in the midst of a good old-fashioned regional UFO flap. Mass sightings, mass confusion, nonstop local news reports, baffled officials, and very little in the way of evidence besides people's own stories, their own experiences. The gossipy spread of which leads everybody to go out looking for the mystery drones. And now you've got all the people who never pay any attention to the night sky in the first place, standing outside looking up in wonder. So every common helicopter and small plane and real estate agent drone and distant satellite and airport-bound airliner is baffling and unfamiliar. And of course, there are the videos everybody sees on their phones or on the local news segment, and it utterly obscures whatever might really be happening. And whether we are speaking of the mystery drone wave of 2019 and very early 2020 over the American Great Plains, or the December 2024 New Jersey Mystery Drones Mystery, we're unlikely to be talking about human-shaped space aliens and little spaceships just doing recon over cornfields or over suburban New Jersey. It's as unlikely as Dunkin' Donuts Corporation dropping off Christmas treats to every household in the Garden State by drone. But there's still a mystery to it all, and the funny thing about this sort of mystery is that it's never, ever resolved, never solved. It's all going to last a few more weeks, like in the Colorado Plains mystery drone wave. And then all we'll have are the memories. If you're interested, look on your podcast player for our October 30th episode from the year 2020, The Great Conjunction.
Desert Oracle Radio.
Sometimes these mass visions are a sign, a warning of something sinister to come. Well, that was the case with the Great Plains mystery drones, because exactly as the increasingly menacing, often triangular Great Plains visitors were making their strange, coordinated, low-altitude nighttime scans of the farmland below, while brilliant motherships hovered high overhead. Right as all that was happening, a sinister virus escaped into the urban population of Wuhan in China. A virus, it was originally claimed, that was delivered unto us by a bat. As increasingly frustrated and nerve-wracked law enforcement officials in Colorado fielded constant calls for the strange, intrusive invaders over farm and field. Too many times in our over-explained, disenchanted world, we demand some simple answers, something ChatGPT can spit out. Basic, maybe even half correct. Were the mystery drones over the American Great Plains in late November and December of 2019 connected in some provable, legally actionable fashion to the simultaneous panic and spread of COVID-19 in China, a disease that would reach American shores a few weeks later? Just as the final mystery drones faded from our skies and our attention spans. A couple of weeks ago, I found myself again being annoyed by a certain kind of false language that fills the newspaper articles and bad faith arguments and general discourse, as they call it on Twitter. Or Blue Sky, the Twitter knockoff for people with too many college degrees and too many personality disorders. Discourse. Now that the year of 2024 is coming to a close, I thought we might choose some of the worst language tics of our time and banish them forever so that we might speak more honestly and have less reason to immediately dismiss what another person says to us. So I posted this. I said, there are a number of evil, empty, last-decade phrases that must be left behind when the new year arrives, halfway through the 2020s. Let's start with circling back. Please add other evil, empty phrases that must also be removed from public life. And some of the responses were as follows. Legacy media. Unless that's the name of a company, let's please stop saying legacy media. It doesn't mean anything. CNN manages a few tens of thousands of viewers nationwide, while a podcaster who is not legacy media is the most listened to broadcaster in the English language. Someone suggests we permanently retire the word workflow. Someone else suggests grind set. And the journalist Jack Schaefer nominates I Hear You. Also on the list, impactful. What does that mean? Are your wisdom teeth bothering you? My truth? There's no such thing. There's measurable truth. And there's opinion. Unpack, when not referring to removing items from luggage or boxes. Green energy, that usually means scraping every living thing from many thousands of acres of pristine wilderness to build industrial electricity factories that will soon be toxic ruins upon a forever destroyed landscape. In an abundance of caution, we're also canceling that phrase. An abundance of caution. Touching base. Unless you're playing baseball. And that's a referee call. Re-upping sounds like something people were doing in the bathroom of Studio 54 in 1979. Anything described as iconic that's not a bug-eyed portrait in an Orthodox church. Oh, don't forget, clap back. No, no clapping back. What are you, a bunch of Marine World SEALs? This is Desert Oracle Radio with Seasonal Soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Well, those are all pretty good choices. Thanks to everybody who made a suggestion. Of course, the worst offenders will just keep up jabbering inanities at you, so it's up to you to correct them as you would with a puppy you're trying to house train. Don't do that. Here's a treat. Most of these words and phrases are corporate therapy speak and only used to fill the empty spaces in Zoom meetings and other empty conversations. Just ask people what they mean. If your colleague at the AI company says she's raw-dogging the spreadsheet, ask for an explanation. Generally, the person won't have any idea what it means because it's something picked up from social media or a TV show on Hulu or whatever. Raw dogging, by the way, is a term you don't want to have to explain to anybody, especially not at a work meeting or over Christmas dinner with all the little kids suddenly listening with great attention. Your crusade against the empty jargon of therapy and conference rooms is good for everyone because when we speak plainly, politely, but with conviction, and don't speak at all when we don't need to, we make life better for everybody, for all. Once you point out that circle back sounds like what a toilet does in Australia, people will avoid the phrase out of shame. Let's also stop saying hey as a business or professional salutation. Hey is for horses. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. my little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near. Between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sound's the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep and miles to go before I sleep. Stopping by woods on a snowy evening by Robert Frost. Written down 102 years ago as dawn broke over the snowy Vermont woods where Frost lived and tried to keep food on the table from freelance writing and not really knowing how to be a farmer. Now let us hear from another giant of American verse, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow of Portland, Maine, with his poem called Christmas Bells. Written by Longfellow on Christmas Day of the year 1863 and first published 2 years later in 1865. Bells on Christmas Day. Their old familiar carols play. And wild and sweet, the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And thought how, as the day had come, the belfries of all Christendom had rolled along the unbroken song of peace on earth, goodwill to men, till ringing, singing on its way, the world revolved from night to day. A voice, a chime, a chant sublime of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Then from each black accursed mouth, the cannon thundered in the south. And with the sound, the carols drowned of peace on earth, goodwill to men. It was as if an earthquake rent the hearthstones of a continent. And made forlorn the households born of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And in despair, I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said. For hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Then pealed the bells more loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. The wrong shall fail, the right prevail. With peace on earth, goodwill to men. From Amboy to Zyzex, broadcasting across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio with Seasonal Soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Visit our website at desertoracle.com. Thanks to our Christmas elves who keep this show running. They do it over at patreon.com/Desert Oracle. While rain and even some snow is forecast for Christmas Day, depending on where you are in the American West and at what altitude and etc., the Mojave Desert has been just beautiful these last weeks of December. And I expect the Great Basin will be cold and bright when I get up to the Eastern Sierra in a few days. Wherever you are this Christmas week, I hope you get outside and get some fresh air, beautiful vistas, and long walks. I'll take a half-day walk up and around the desert foothills over just about anything. Nature's gift, a Christmas present from the Creator. The prettiest winter holiday I can recall was right up there by the Black Rock Canyon Campground, Joshua Tree National Park, a couple of years ago, when my kids were still little and no video game could compete with fresh fallen snow. Joshua trees and their juniper friends never looked so pretty as when coated with new snow, the ground all white all around. Other than the little paw prints of various small creatures who've already explored the brilliant new morning landscape. We hiked around, and before long we were throwing snowballs at each other. Now and then those pictures pop up on my phone and the passage of time hits me like an ice ball thrown by a five-year-old just discovering his own strength. While the dog runs past again. Good night and Merry Christmas from the Voice of the Desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM. Next, Ken shares a more sobering perspective on the holiday, reviewing the news of several Christmas pasts. From December 23rd, 2022, he calls it Christmas in Death Valley with the Lost 49ers.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and it is winter time. Happy solstice to you all. Hope you got outside on the shortest day of the year. I used to like to take a long walk with family or friends on winter solstice. But to be honest, for several years now, it has just been me and the dog. It's a time for silence and a time for reflection. Not a time for chit-chat. Some people do their reflecting on Christmas or on New Year's Day, but winter solstice is the end of the solar year. And then it is immediately the new year, just like that. It happened just before 2 p.m. here in the Mojave High Desert on solstice day. Because I was dragging all day long because there's lots to do, but I really want to get in the cave and hibernate for a long winter's nap. There was not much of the day left by the time we were walking, the dog and I. We got about 40 minutes of sunshine before it dropped behind Nolina Peak. And so much for that. Goodbye to 2022, a year that never really knew what it was about. We do get years like that sometimes. Especially after too many years in a row when just about everybody in America seemed to be stuck on the same topic. Presidents, pandemics, etc. It has been a quieter year up here around Joshua Tree. The fad has peaked. That's what everybody says. Which is all right. Things go up, things go down. I heard an out-of-towner just raging in a public place just last week about how she and some of her friends from Orange County had bought some houses around here to turn them into vacation rentals, and boy, it did not sound like it was going well. Never buy at the peak. Never buy at the end of the hype. That's what my Uncle Scrooge McDuck used to say this time of year. One thing that has not changed is people still come up to the desert near the desert wilderness for the holidays. Outside in the clean winter air. And that's good. We all deserve a lot more nature in our lives, a lot more space and solace. Now and then, at least. Wherever you are during this Christmas time and Hanukkah, I hope your holidays are good and your new year is better. And to sort of get in the spirit, I thought I'd tell you about some interesting events that happen during this time of year, the Christmas holidays. Back on Christmas Day of 1066, William the Duke of Normandy, also known as William the Bastard, led a big fleet of ships across the channel to England, and, well, that was it. The Normans took over completely. The Normans were Vikings who got bought off by Paris to settle down and protect France from all the other Vikings out there. And they very quickly became extremely French, as people sometimes do. and now there are 5 or 6 Netflix series about their descendants. That's 1,000 years of content. On Christmas Day of 1899, the great Humphrey Bogart was born in New York City. His father was a heart surgeon and his mother was an artist and commercial illustrator. Maud Humphrey, earning the equivalent of $1.4 million a year in today's dollars, and more than double the income of her husband, Dr. Belmont DeForest Bogart. Young Humphrey went to New York's Trinity School, where he was, quote, an indifferent, sullen student who showed no interest in after-school activities. He flunked out of Phillips Academy for, quote, smoking, drinking, poor academic performance, and throwing the headmaster into a pond, end quote. With no real options remaining, Bogart joined the U.S. Navy. Nobody really knows what happened after that. But they say he could quote Plato and Ralph Waldo Emerson and 1,000 lines of Shakespeare by memory. Desert Oracle Radio with soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. And like every year at this time, we try to provide you with some family dinner table conversational topics so you can sort of right the ship when things start to get ugly. On December 25 of the year 1758, Edmund Halley's predicted return of the Great Comet was proven correct. But he was dead by then, so not a lot of personal vindication for him. Halley's Comet was our first proof of something other than a planet that orbited the sun. And 2 decades later, on Christmas night of 1776, George Washington crossed the Delaware, one of history's mysteries. It was on Christmas Day of the year 1000, which was 1,022 years ago, that Stephen I, or Istvan I, was ordained the first king of Hungary. You know, I used to live there in Budapest, and every summer they'd bring out his withered, 1,000-year-old magic hand and carry it all through town in a procession. It's a very powerful, magical day for kings and wars and such things. On Christmas of the year 800, on the western side of the faded empire, Pope Leo III crowned Charlemagne Emperor of the Romans at St. Peter's Basilica. And during the Great War, what we call World War I today, because we very quickly had another one, soldiers on both sides of the miserable, freezing Western Front celebrated a Christmas truce of their own making, completely unofficial. The generals and the war profiteers were horrified to learn that men from both sides of the conflict, quote, ventured into no man's land on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day to mingle and exchange food and souvenirs. There were joint burial ceremonies and prisoner swaps, while several meetings ended in carol singing and games of football with one another. Soldiers from the United Kingdom and France and Germany and Russia and Austria-Hungary all took part. To make sure this did not happen again, the war leaders of these nations and empires threatened punishment should there be any more friendly truces. And by 1916, all the soldiers hated each other as planned. It was Christmas Day of 1990, some three decades ago now, when Tim Berners-Lee tried out his new hypertext webpage system, which really did start off as a lovely idea. All of the world's knowledge available to anyone through a worldwide web of databases and personal computers. It took about 10 years to really take off, and then we found out it was a year later, on December 25 of 1991, when Mikhail Gorbachev stepped down as leader of the Soviet Union, ushering in a new era of world peace. Speaking of territorial wars that drag on forever, on Christmas of 1868, President Andrew Johnson, who was serving in that position after our most famous president, Abraham Lincoln, was shot in the head, granted an unconditional pardon to Confederate troops not already pardoned, as many had been through the terms of surrender or the 1866 more limited pardon. See, the 1868 pardon also covered treason, but they had to send in a form for that part. And in 1968, three U.S. astronauts spent Christmas Eve orbiting the moon. It was the Apollo 8 mission, which was supposed to be a test of the lunar lander, the Eagle, in Earth orbit. But work had fallen behind on the lander, so NASA improvised and said, well, let's just go orbit the moon. Which, well, nobody had ever done anything like that before. Astronauts Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and William Anders became the first human beings to leave Earth's orbit to orbit the moon, to see the dark side of the moon. And they were the first people to see the whole Earth from space. And then they read from Genesis and the Bible. You could do that kind of thing then. It was a different time.
Darkness earth was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness.
And God called the light day. And the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. And let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament. And divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. And the evening and the morning were the second day.
And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you.
An interesting thing about that lunar lander, my dad worked on that, part of a pretty tight crew working in Houston in the late 1960s. The blue collar Space Center employees, I guess they were slacking off so much that NASA had to make about a dozen major breakthroughs on that mission. And yet they never thanked my dad, that I'm aware of. A group of overland travelers headed for the gold fields of California spent their Christmas in a place they would give the unpleasant name of Death Valley. A Methodist preacher from Ohio named James W. Breyer, his wife Juliet, and their three young sons, aged 9, 6, and 4, were among those who were later called the Lost 49ers. Fearing the fate of the Donner Party and the Sierra Nevada snows just a couple of years prior, the Breyers had seen, and here I quote from Death Valley National Park's archive, quote, a curious hand-sketched trapper's map leading directly to the gold diggings and purporting to shave about 500 miles off the overland trip. The captain of the Breyers' wagon train, a Mormon frontiersman named Jefferson Hunt, tried to dissuade them from trying the mysterious route. 49er William Manley reported years later that Hunt, quote, very much doubted if a white man ever went over it, and that he did not consider it at all safe for those who had wives and children in their company to take the unknown road. Gentlemen, Captain Hunt exclaimed, all I have to say is that if you take that route, you will all be landed in hell. But the Reverend Briar did not fear hell, so he helped persuade other families to join his, along with several parties of single young men in trying the shortcut. On October 9 of 1849, near today's town of Enterprise, Utah, some 80 wagons peeled off the old Spanish trail and headed due west into the untracked barrens. Within a few days, most of those wagons turned around and rejoined Jefferson Hunt's wagon train on the old Spanish trail, reaching Los Angeles about 7 weeks later. The Briars and three other families and a number of the single men blundered on, little imagining that they would become known to history as the Lost 49ers. Starvation, desperate thirst, and exhaustion plagued the immigrants as they struggled and straggled through the barren wastelands of southern Nevada. They splintered into at least six groups to try different directions, parting and sometimes re-merging and parting again along the way. Some slaughtered some of their oxen, burned their wagons in the cook fires, abandoned their belongings, and continued on foot. The youngest Briar child, barely out of toddlerhood, had to be carried. The middle son, John, remembered, "After many days of bitter travel, we reached the Amargosa and camped in the dry channel, counting ourselves fortunate to find a muddy pool of water. The end of the next day, December 23rd, found us with our canteens empty at the summit of a pass where there was no water, no grass, no fuel." The following morning, on Christmas Eve, the Reverend Briar spotted a green oasis in the distance. All day, the little party hurried toward it, desperate for water. They finally reached the springs, one hot and one cold, around 3 o'clock on Christmas morning. Today, that spot is within Death Valley National Park, located at the mouth of Furnace Creek Canyon, and it's known as Travertine Spring. And this part comes from the newspaper The San Francisco Call, December 25th of 1889. The headline reads, "Our Christmas Amid the Terrors of Death Valley." "This was a Christmas none could forget," said Juliet Briar, then in her 80s. "My little ones had no thoughts of Santa Claus that year. The men killed an oxen for our Christmas, but its flesh was more like poisonous slime than meat. There was not a particle of fat on the bones. But we boiled the hide and the hoofs for what nutriment they might contain. We also cooked and ate the little blood there was in the carcass. I had one small biscuit, but we had plenty of coffee, and I think it was that which kept us alive. Music and singing? My, no, we were too far gone for that. Nobody spoke very much, but I knew we were all thinking of home back east and all the cheer and good things there." One of the single 49ers, William Manley, wrote that none of us knew exactly where we were, nor when the journey would be ended, nor when substantial relief would come. Well, their prospects look dismal. Without water, grass for the oxen. And Christmas was a day of sorrow. Thirteen immigrants lost their lives on that detour. William Manley and a companion eventually emerged from Death Valley and made their way to a Spanish rancho. And then they headed back to help the others who were waiting in the desert. On February 12th of 1850, the Briars and some of the single 49ers walked up to the same rancho, and they were taken in by its kind and generous owners. Altogether, their shortcut had taken them about 4 months to complete. From Amboy to Zizek's and across the great Mojave Wilderness and beyond, this is Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree on KCDZ 107.7 FM Friday nights from 10 to 11. That's because we have two episodes in a row here in the high desert. Happy solstice and Christmas and Hanukkah to our friends everywhere. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting this program on DesertOracle.com and Patreon.com. And thanks for your patience of Job if you're a subscriber to our periodicals, which, as revealed in the winter 2023 issue of Alta Journal, will be waking up from their long nap. As soon as I work out the details with the new printing plant, immediately after the New Year's holiday, I'm going to turn on the subscriptions again. So you'll be able to subscribe if you want to DesertOracle.com, but not until I know the day and the hour, etc. If you're lucky enough to be spending the holidays anywhere in the desert, especially in the Mojave, where it's reasonably warm compared to the rest of the country, I hope you get out, enjoy it. 66 on Christmas Day in Joshua Tree. 44 or so at night, cold enough for a fire, but not cold enough to worry about it. Good night from the voice of the desert.
Well, whether or not you celebrate this week, I hope it's filled with good times for you and those around you. Thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks to everyone that volunteers and supports KGVM. And thank you for listening. If you want to reach me, the number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio Replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Finally, thank you to my assistant producers today, Bree and Riley. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams.